Right, welcome everybody. Today is Wednesday, the 22nd of April. It is 15:13 Dublin time, Dublin mushroom time, where you turn up whatever you want. And I want to check in with great joy at our session today. As a result of our dialogue a couple of weeks ago, I have tried some tools, mainly in Google and Notebook LM, to help me work with content that begins as static, but then it needs to move and be more dynamic. So I'm very excited about that. And looking forward to Chris Cook joining today. Chris and I have been working together for about a year. And it was interesting, Josh, that you were the one who said that Olus suggested that we invite him. That's an AI giving us a suggestion which we followed. How interesting is that? Because Olus is my AI, and when I did the summary, it said you should be including Chris Cook into this conversation. So thank you for doing that. He's on his way. So blessings to everybody. Josh, how are you today in Lima, Peru?
I'm good. We're just winding down summer. It's getting gray and overcast, and it will be that way for the next several months. I'm confused as to why we're not all here at the moment, like I mentioned before you hit the record button. And my suspicion is that some people will be showing up in 45 minutes, which will be an hour after what you and I thought was the correct start time. So I don't know how much we want to dive into now before they show up. And it's kind of funny because this is what we're here to talk about, is how we deal with asynchronicity in terms of conversations. So if we were in the future and had this all doped out, maybe what we're dealing with right now would not be an issue because we would just have the base, the foundation layer conversation among the three of us who are here at the moment, and then it would turn into the foundation for an ongoing conversation. And maybe it doesn't matter so much who was there at the moment of recording the foundation.
Beautiful observation. We are the fractal of that which we wish to create.
Yeah, exactly.
Giri, how are you?
Yeah. Well, I'm really grateful because I feel like I was in 2019. I worked for Hub Science, a little startup in Hungary, and they really like what I do, and I work for them, and they wanted to buy it, but their founders, oh no, you can't just rent it from this guy. You either he can own it or not. So that was the end of it. And at that time we had two weekly sprint meetings. So just I went. I worked from home every Thursday afternoon around this time. I tooled in, and we spent 2 3 hours talking. So I really feel like I'm back in that startup world. Which is lovely to have. And I nearly got it all set up for you to do that, to do this kind of integration of synchronous and asynchronous, because you need both basically. But my machine is hardly operable because it's got too many windows up on both of my machines. But I hope next week I can actually show you how you could actually start working like that. Yeah.
Ooh, you are whetting our appetite, brother. Wah, 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 wah. Looking forward to that. And Chris Cook has entered the room.
Hello, guys.
Lovely to see you, Chris. How are you today?
Late.
You're, well, you, this is that's a perception. You said you'd be here at 15:15, and here you are.
Yeah. Well, it's better not late as in dead, isn't it? So there we go.
So we were just checking in, and what I'll do, Chris, for the recording is just get the other guys to introduce themselves and the context by which we're here, and then you can check in. Is that okay?
Sure.
Yeah, so I'll start. So Josh and I met in a group called Monetary Diversity, which is a group of people who are doing different things. We noticed, he and I, that for all of the time we spent together, 2 hours, we spent most of the time messing around in a Miro board, and we didn't really connect. So I set up a call then with Josh, and I said, "I love what you're doing with Silvio Gazzell's work. How can we follow on with that?" And as a result of that dialogue, Josh said, "You know what? I have an issue where I'm doing these podcasts, but I've no way to really turn them into dynamic dialogues. Do you know something we might do?" And we immediately brought in Gyuri, who's in Holland, and we brought in Guillen, who's in South Africa, and then we brought
I'm
in
now
Michael.
Hungary.
Hungary. What did I say?
You
Holland.
said Holland.
Sorry, I have Rainier on my mind. Sorry. So, Gyuri is in the Free State of Hungary, the European Free State of Hungary.
Post European, hopefully.
That's good. Oh my God! Bring back the Kaiser. What? Gyuri has been working on annotation for some time, and he's been working on IPFS, Interplanetary File System. So Gyuri wants to build something. Then we had Michael Meehan, who was here for a bit. He's doing a bit of tech, and then we had Cameron, who's doing a bit of tech. So we meet every 2 weeks just to catch up and see if we can produce an MVP, a minimum viable product, that Josh can then put out when he does the second series of Economics 2.0, which is what he's teaching as part of Henry George. So that's the context under which we come. So if Josh and Gyuri can give kind of an intro and a background, and then Chris can check in. Minimum workable, you're right, yeah, an MWP, I prefer that.
Because we not into we are not lean startup. We're not interested
That's right.
in finding quickly out what the market wants.
I love
We
it.
know that we want this for all forever. You know,
I
it's
love
not
it.
the question, is it needed? Can be delivered? That's the real question.
Beautiful. So while you have the microphone off, say hello to Chris. I don't know if you've met before.
No, hello, hello.
I don't think we have met.
So,
No,
Gyuri, can you
I
tell
don't think, I
Chris a
don't
little
think.
bit about what you're doing?
Well, it's
Oh,
I've been on this journey for nearly 22 years. It all started with a DTI supported feasibility study for personalized mobile computing. So I've been doing mobile computing in 2003, and with the hidden agenda that I and this is how it worked, that I wanted to make this mobile computing, web computing, laptop computing with just one thing, you know. So you know all this, and from the outset, the goal was it's really making going from personal computing or mobile computing into interpersonal computing. So that's really the journey. A little bit of I don't know whether you're aware of Engelbart's work, Chris. Have you heard of Engelbart, Doug Engelbart?
No.
Can you put
Well,
it in
Doug
the chat?
Engelbart
Can you put it in the
is
chat? So we get his name right.
just one sentence that he wrote in 1960. He wrote a proposal which eventually got funded and everything, and his goal was just the one sentence, which is only on the abstract, which is never distributed. He wanted his goal was to augment the intellectual capability of the individual human being, and doing it in a collaborative setting. So he's invented the mouse, and the whole computing that we do, this
Mars-driven thing because he invented the Mars, but that's not the most important thing. Engelbart and his team, they really created the modern computing what we have now, and they actually had everything in 68. They have video conferencing, collaborative writing. In fact, they have collaborative writing where each one had its own Mars. Okay, so you could have Mars fighting. Anyhow, so Engelbart is really, I've been doing Engelbart work before I discovered that he existed. In fact, just last thing, in my PhD, I reinvented the meta language system, they called it, or whatever they called it, and it got classified. So 20 years later, I could rediscover it, reinvent it basically, because the same logic leads there. So I've been on this long, long journey, and hopefully the technology is catching up with us, interplanetary file system and all these new protocols and a new web can be built. And I'm not the only one working on it. Lots of people trying to do this. So people see this opportunity that instead of a centralized web, decentralized web is not enough. It's decent enough, it's a nice shift, it's paradigm shift, but we really need to flip the paradigm so it's got to be people-centered. And so that's what I'm doing. Yeah, thank you.
And Josh, a couple of minutes for you to get Chris some context, and then we bring in Chris.
Sure. Chris, nice to meet you. I'm currently located in Lima, Peru, but I'm originally from New York. I guess I'll start my little narrative in 2007, where I had already had a brief career on Wall Street, found that that world was not for me, but and had gone on to other things, music actually. And around that time, I happened to be reading Keynes, and in Keynes's main book, The General Theory, he spent 5 pages talking about this guy, Silvio Gesell, who I had never heard of before. And it was interesting enough that I wanted to learn more. And so I tried to get a copy of his book, which is called The Natural Economic Order. And the first clue about how off the beaten track that would eventually take me was that the book was not even in print in English. I had to track down a retired library copy from the 1950s, and I finally got it, and I read it, and it immediately spoke to me and made sense in terms of describing why the dream of the free market, which is individuals f being made free to employ their creativity, their initiative to pursue their own self-interest and thereby benefiting society in the process. That's to me, a beautiful idea. But it doesn't match up with what I saw, working in the world of finance and economics, where people are not benefiting society by pursuing their own self-interest. And Gesell made sense of it in a way that I had never seen before, but that spoke to me immediately as being true, self-evident. And I spent about the next 13 or 14 years talking about these ideas to anyone who would listen, writing about them, trying to find someone to explain to me why nobody knows about this guy. Is his analysis wrong? I assumed it was probably wrong for the first several years because if it wasn't wrong, it didn't make sense that nobody knew about him. So I was kind of looking for somebody to explain to me what was wrong with it for quite a while. And that never happened. And about 4 or 5 years ago, I finally connected with a network of people in other countries who are working on advocating for Gesell's ideas, specifically in Argentina and in Germany. There are organizations that are dedicated to promoting his ideas. And as an English speaker, I started helping those groups do outreach in the English-speaking world. And through that process, it became clear to me that there needed to be an entity in the English-speaking world that is doing what these folks are doing in the Spanish and German-speaking worlds. So maybe 3 years ago, I created the Silvio Gesell Foundation, built a website, and almost immediately interesting things started coming my way, including an invitation from the Henry George School to give a course on a virtual course on Silvio Gesell. And I did that close to 2 years ago now. It's now available on YouTube. And that gave birth to a podcast which we called Economy 2.0, which was intended to be an arena in which people like myself who are advocating for specific alternative models to the economic status quo can come together and have dialogue and potentially collaborate, or at least to be aware of each other's existence. Because what became clear to me in the process of advocating for a specific point of view, a specific alternative model, is that there are a lot of people who are doing the same with their own preferred alternative models, but they're not talking to each other for the most part. They're kind of operating in their own bubbles, and it's quite challenging to connect those bubbles because each one is very heavily invested in a specific point of view. And when somebody else comes along and says, well, no, do it this way, not your way, they're challenging, that person's whole identity in a sense. And it's very unlikely that those two things, those two bubbles, are going to come together in a fruitful way. So I felt that there needed to be an arena for dialogue, and that was the purpose of the first season of Economy 2.0, which was I think we did 20 episodes. Each one, I had an invited guest who had some perspective on what an alternative economic future might look like. And it was a conversation between myself and that guest with an audience. The audience was invited to participate. And it was a very good series of conversations. It kind of ran its course. And we decided not to continue in that format. But I made so many really promising connections, which this conversation grew out of. I connected with Nicholas Franca, who was the organizer of the Monetary Diversity Organization that Paul and I connected through. And it's clear to me that this is a fertile soil that deserves to be cultivated. And the question is how to do that. And I'm going to try to wrap this up because I've already gone on at length, but to bring us up to the moment, I personally want to initiate two or three interrelated conversations. But I have been holding off on starting them because I feel the lack of a communications paradigm that is adequate to the conversations that I want to have. A YouTube video of a conversation is nice. It's a good way of sharing a conversation, but it does not include all of the people who view it after the fact and might have something to contribute to the conversation. And that is related to another challenge, which is time zones. All of us are in different parts of the world, and a bunch of our potential collaborators are in other time zones, and it's virtually impossible to get everyone you want together at one time in order to have a really inclusive conversation. So the idea of how to conduct what I call an asynchronous meeting is what I think this conversation is primarily about. How could we have something that resembles a YouTube video, but is more inclusive and more interactive, so that for someone else who couldn't be there during the recording, but is an important participant or potential participant, how can that person be included in the conversation in a full way? Rather than, looking at a YouTube video and maybe typing in a YouTube comment their input. So the idea that we have been discussing for a couple of weeks now is whether we could create a format where there is a video recording, and that's the base layer of an ongoing conversation that other people can then come into at their leisure and go through and participate exactly when and how they want to. So, for example, you might have a 2-hour recording, and at minute 37, there's a specific topic being discussed that you, Chris, want to give some input about, but you weren't there. You can go in at minute 37, you can insert your input in whatever format you're comfortable with. It could be text, it could be audio, it could be video. And you, let's say you choose video, you record yourself responding to the point, and you insert it into the original recording. It becomes part of the ongoing asynchronous meeting. So yeah, I guess I'll leave it there. This architecture for a new kind of inclusive asynchronous conversation is what I want to have available to me before I initiate these conversations, which are very important to me, but that I don't want to start in the form of a YouTube video or a traditional Zoom meeting. So, yeah, that's what we've been working on.
Fascinating.
Oh, Chris, if you can introduce yourselves to the other brothers, and then we can open up some space for this this percolation.
Yeah, just a quick response to what I just heard about annotations. I mean, I've immediately struck my Twitter, which I insist on calling it, and the community notes, as a response to a tweet. Anyway, about me, Jack of all trades and master of none, really. Started out in the UK in insolvency. That was my first job in insolvency, working for the Department of Trade. So forensic accounting was part of it, finding out where people went bust, prosecuting miscreants, which you occasionally have. From there, I went to, again, in the DTI, more forensic accounting, but this time, potentially criminal company fraud investigation branch at the DTI in London. That took me in the mid 80s into the City of London, which was just starting to become regulated. And so I joined one of the first regulators in the commodity markets in 1986, which was a really fascinating time. So I got to learn a great deal about regulation, which was just beginning then. I think of myself as the, if you know your Lord of the Rings, like the Tom Bombadil of regulation. I was there before it even existed, and I'm still there in a sense. And in 1990, I became a director of what's now the biggest global energy exchange, which was not the biggest then, but was growing rapidly. And for 6 years, grew with that job, and found myself very, very, very interested in market development from the point of view of making improvements in a way that is consistent with a fair market. And so looking at regulation as quality control rather than business prevention, which it seems to have become. And I, for instance, designed the UK natural gas futures market. That was my legal design, but it was as a response to a market in buying and selling molecules of methane, which is stark, staring bonkers. And should be exterminated from the earth. But the point being, the futures contract is a means of actually managing the risk of commodity trading. And I could talk about the electricity market since then, et cetera, et cetera. But by 1996, this is sort of getting into the field of view of what we're here talking about. I first got exposed to the internet really around that time, mid-90s. And the first really interesting point about it came when I went to a meeting held by, and I it was to do with the Trump, it was to do with how goods, oil in particular, actually transit the world, and it was to do with documents of title. How is it you can actually prove that you own the oil on the ship, for instance, and things called bills of lading, deeply technical, very few people have ever heard of them, but integral to global trade in commodities. And I went to a meeting looking at electronic, basically making electronic, making virtual these complex paper documents. And it was called Bolero, Bills of Lading Electronic Registration Organization. And that was my first exposure to digitizing and digital markets globally, although we were actually then building the world's first Windows-based trading system at the exchange I was at. We were pretty bloody innovative. And so I got really interested in that. And its connection to an organization called the Protection and Indemnity Club. Who here has heard of a P&I club? Probably very few among you. You have, Paul. I know that. But a Protection and Indemnity Club is basically a global framework for mutual assurance of risk that the middleman, Lloyd's in this case, will not take. 90% of global shipping is mutually assured and has been for 150 years for certain risks that the middleman will not cover. So I was focused then from that point on with global mutual agreements, disintermediation, cutting out the middleman, because I immediately thought then, and then Napster popped up when a 19-year-old, by introducing file sharing, made redundant the global business model of the music industry. And that struck me deeply in, I think that was 98. And at that point, I put together a dot com. It was called the iteration was OilClear, but I called it NewClear. It was paperless trade confirmation. Okay, international. Whenever a trade took place internationally, you'd make a phone call, and the minute you put the phone down, you would send a fax or a telex to confirm the transaction you did, legally binding. And I put together a project called, and it was OilClear. It was the first iteration, and it was very simple. Consisted of three things. One was a messaging system. Yahoo Chat was predominant then. Second thing was a shared database. This was 10 years before the blockchain came along and fucked things up. And then the third thing, and this is the mutual agreement, like the P&I club agreement, was a global club agreement, if you will, that the minute that when I click the mouse to accept the transaction message that you sent to me, and the trade dropped into the database, then we were both legally bound by it. And that I had at least two directors from every, from each global exchange put personal money into it. Top venture capitalists put personal money into it. Everybody wanted to own it. If the sell side owned it, the buy side wouldn't use it. That was the problem. And if the buy side owned it, the sell side wouldn't use it. Because what I'd come up with was a global utility for trade capturing and confirming transactions. And in the end, I found that I couldn't surmount that business model problem of basically each side of the market, not wanting to anybody else to own it. And after that, the money ran out. I blew the whistle on what the investment banks were doing in the oil market inadvertently, lost everything I had, home, family, everything, had to start again from scratch. And rebuilt my life on, from scratch in a sense. Questioned everything, literally questioned everything. I thought I understood how money markets worked. I realized I didn't. And cutting out about 8 years of time, I was then asked after the financial crash, which I wasn't the only one who saw it coming. I was asked by the former Minister of Defence of the UK, Lord Reed, to become a senior research fellow at the Institute for Strategy, Resilience and Security at UCL, which was basically set up to look to look at, well, what does a resilient financial system even look like, and could we create one? And over a period of 15 years, and many very interesting experiences over the period, we think we've actually finally got there. And come up with some ideas. And along the way, I think there is no strand of economic history, including Giselle, which I haven't looked at and seen in from my own personal opinion, well, this was valid, this was not, something we all do. And tried to actually analyze and codify and extract lessons. And along the way, I've written down huge amounts. Paul will can speak to that. I sent an email just before this, just with a few links to some of the things that I'd done. So a presentation to a submission to the to a parliamentary committee, a peer-to-peer document on FinTech 2.0. But just quickly, that's all context. I just wanted to make clear my view in relation to market paradigms and economic paradigms. I start from the basis that markets, the first iteration of markets 1.0, was physical presence, when people were physically present and transacted physically and maybe gave time to pay to each other, etc., etc. So that market was and is physical market presence, but disconnected from other markets. Over the centuries, what we saw via communications and travel and all the rest of it was reaching the current market paradigm of intermediated markets, middlemen, whatever the form they are. And that market is centralized but connected. This is market paradigm 2.0, the one that I was a director of a global exchange in. And you have all the intermediaries for all the different economic functions. But the one that we're going to and rapidly, market 3.0, is not that you're physically present. It's not that you're present through an intermediary. It's that you are present on the network. And everything that I've been about has been what are the legal agreements, what are the services that we can look to? How is that going to work? And it's, as Gyuri says, it's completely people-centric. Completely people-centric. And the end game, I believe, and this so much ties into what you're doing, Yuri, is, and I've seen it, this is how I've always seen it, that I will have a device, and on that device will be seven lines of code, like Stripe, and there's seven lines of code, and everything else is an API. Everything else, that is my little personal operating system, and everything else is protocols. Everything else is protocols. And, depending on the language that you use, that has always been my vision for 30 years. I believe we are approaching the ability to do that. And it's not just about networks. Networks is not enough. We'd be captured by Amazon Web Services if it were. Broadcast, it's a combination of broadcast data one way and internet back channels and communications the other. And I'm absolutely sure, having worked on this for 30 years, that it's possible to have a completely, foolproof mechanism. What is it you call it? Zero knowledge. Completely possible with these elements constructed in the right way. So it's a pleasure and a privilege to be talking to the people that you've brought to this space, Paul. I know you don't, you work to, you use your instinct with these things, and I'm following it as best I can. And thanks for bearing with me for so long.
I personally would follow you anywhere. I keep calling you the prophet, so you're my prophet. So welcoming Tune van Sambeek. Welcome.
Can I briefly introduce Toyn, and then he can
Fine.
introduce himself? So Toyn is one of the many fruitful connections that I made through the Economy 2.0 series. He was a guest on an episode. I don't even remember how we first connected, but he essentially arrived at some of the same conclusions and ideas that Silvio Gesell did independently of Silvio Gesell, and was had already created and was advocating for this alternative monetary model that he can tell us about. He's very digitally savvy. I am not. I think Chris and Yuri, you guys sound like you are.
Not particularly, Josh. I know
Okay.
enough to know what I don't know.
Right. Well, I don't even know that. But Toyn is one of those, I would describe him as a visionary who, up until recently, has kind of been operating in a bubble like all of the other visionaries. And as soon as we started communicating, it was clear to me that we were kindred spirits, so to speak, that we shared a lot of common values and ideas, and that we needed to be in communication with each other. So, Toyn, I'll let you introduce yourself. Tell us about who you are, what you've done, how you arrive at this, at being part of this conversation.
Yeah, thank you, Josh. Can you all hear me very well?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Yeah, so thank you, Josh, again for this very nice introduction. I'm Teun van Sombeek, but most of the time people call me Tony because my name is quite difficult to pronounce for most languages. I'm from the Netherlands. I live in at the moment in Kigali in Rwanda. But I worked all my life in construction, basically in the Netherlands. I'm a construction engineer, but also like an IT, a self sort of self-educated IT guy. I was programming before, let's say, home computers exist on my Texas calculator, and did it ever since. And I'm also sort of mathematician, econometrics. I think my camera is just misbehaving. That's why I logged out. So if it's too bad, then I'll try to fix that. So let's say 15 years ago, I went to Africa to see if I could build a precast concrete factory for affordable housing. Affordable mass housing. And because of that, I studied the market. So what is the income of people? What can they afford? And at what level, let's say, what is the cheapest sort of house that you can build if you're using precast, let's say, highly automated precast concrete technology? I work together with some companies in Germany and Italy that have, let's say, a market leader in those technologies. But then I sort of figured out, and that was like 10 years ago, that even if you go down to the cheapest possible price, and then you need to think about, let's say, a two-bedroom apartment with everything finished, with a parking lot outside, you can build that. In that time, it was like $12,000. I think in the meantime, it's something like $15,000. So you could build a fully finished apartment. But for that price, let's say half of the people that are living in Africa are not able to buy it with a mortgage or even rent it. So even if you can get to the lowest price of something that you can still call a house that doesn't have a dirt floor, then let's say these people cannot afford it. So my question then was, is there something wrong with the financial system? Another indicator was like, I think the war in Afghanistan costed, I think, $14 trillion. And with that amount of money, you could house forever for free without a mortgage half of the world population. So only this war costed, let's say, so much that you could house half of the population, which means that if you do that, there is no incentive for people to steal land or anything from the other countries. So there's no incentive to go to war anyway, yeah, because that is the idea of war, that you want to get stuff to make your life sort of worthwhile and get a proper house. So that was sort of my starting point. Okay, I said, okay, something is really bad, and that was the time that sort of Bitcoin broke through, and I quickly knew exactly how it works because I read the white papers and I looked at the some of the programs, so I know how hashing works. I know how the blockchain works, so I can program it myself. And I was thinking about creating something that is sort of like a universe. That was my first idea, to create a sort of universal basic income system based on cryptocurrency technology, where you could solve this financial, let's say, how you call it? It's like a disruption. It's like a gap. You know, the gap is so immense that something should be done. So that's when I started to think about it, write about it, read about it, and because of my job, I have like a lot of time or to do this. So basically, the last 10 years, I spent like 80, probably like 80 hours a week, just to investigate this, making ideas, programming stuff like that, and reading about it and things like that. So, I came to the conclusion that, let's say, I'm going to go through that very shortly. I created a system. It's called One Coin Per Hour. To let's say there are a few issues that you want to resolve. It has to do with monopolies. You want to sort of get rid of, I call it four monopolies, which two have to do with the creation of money, and the other ones had to do with land and with IP rights. These let's say four, let's call them legal system, because it's like legally set up. They create scarcity, and to me, scarcity is artificial. So any scarcity that we have in the world is artificial. So, and that's why I wrote a book about it. It's called Abundomy. It's like the mirror image of the economy, which is like the science of scarcity. And I try to focus on, let's say, the science of abundance. So how can we create abundance for everybody? So, and you look at the Earth is big enough to do that. So, but obviously, let's say the financial system is the most, let's say, used system to create scarcity. And derived from the financial system, you have, let's say, legal systems that has to do with land ownership and with IP rights and patents and things like that. So my first focus was the financial system. If you look at I always say there are two monopolies there. One is the creation of money. That is, let's say, one monopoly. The other one is insight in transactions. So, because when you have the monopoly of insight in transactions, you also have the monopoly basically of creation of money. Because if you are the only one can see all the transactions, then you can create on the side money that nobody else can see. And that's how the let's say the creation of money monopoly works. So those two go together. And I'm always like trying to mirror things. So I try to do the opposite. So if that is bad, so what is the opposite? So the opposite is to let's say democratize the creation of money, which means that everybody, just instead of having a very small group of people, which is to me it's like 10 families that just create money out of thin air, and everything is sort of derived from that. Instead of having that, each time you create money, everybody that participates in the financial system should get a portion of that freshly created money. So you want to have a system going on like that to sort of get rid of that first monopoly. The second monopoly is every transaction should be transparent to everybody, because there is no other way to fight, let's say, the monopoly of insider money if not everybody can see. You know, it's nobody will spend all his day to check 8 billion accounts, but you need to be able, if you want to pin more points one account, you need to be able to look at what is going on there. And to me, that it has to do with the creation of, let's say, the money that we are using day to day. On top of that financial system, you can, because you won't get rid of gold, you won't get rid of diamonds, so you can still build, let's say, cryptocurrencies on top of what I call ethical money, a money system that is fair to everybody. So you can still build those systems on top of it, but let's say the base money, and to me it's like the money we use to buy bread. So, you know, I don't care if anybody sees that I bought bread or went to a restaurant or so these basic transactions everybody can see. if I want to do something that no other people will see, then I will find another way using cryptocurrencies or anything that nobody can see that. But that is on top, and that has another purpose. The first purpose you have is to create, I call it lubricating the let's say barter. Basically, what you want to do with money is lubricate barter, because barter is not very handy. And if you do that, that is sort of the system. And it's let's say one, I call it one coin per hour. How does this work? And it's a very simple formula. If you have one coin per hour, so if you give everybody one coin per hour, you create, let's say, 8 billion coins every hour, which is, let's say, an infinite amount of inflation. So you want to curb that inflation, and you can simply do that by using demurrage, or let's say a negative interest rate. So you just and you do you also do that per hour. And what I did is I used the number 1 divided by 20,000, or you can also say 0.99995. If you, and it's simple math. So if I use a demurrage of, let's say, that I multiply all the money that I have with a factor of 0.99995 every hour, then if I do that infinitive, then I end up with 20,000 coins. So if I don't spend anything, I get one coin every hour, and I have a demurrage of that percentage, then I end up with 20,000 coins, which means that if everybody does this, you get a fixed money supply per person of 20,000 coins. And that is very important, because when you have a fixed money supply, you don't have inflation and deflation anymore. It just goes away. So then you have, let's say, a basis of doing of trading with each other. And the nice thing about the percentage is that, let's say, if you are a millionaire, then you will pay, let's say, $50 or 50 coins every hour. But if you have no money, you don't pay anything, but because the demurrage is a percentage over nothing. So you don't lose nothing. So people that have nothing will automatically get one coin every hour, which will be enough to sort of buy food and live. It's like a social security system. And this way you just pump money around. So this is how you create money, how you make sure that the money supply is always constant, and that there is a sort of a social security net, but also that if you have a lot of money, you can still become a millionaire, but you have quite a good incentive, because on a yearly basis you're talking about 30%, let's say a 30% cut that goes off your let's say your balance, to invest it. So you want to invest that money. You don't want to hold the money. You want to invest it in houses or in land, or whatever you can buy. To make sure your money doesn't just fly away. And when you die, your money just disappears. So you can still so your inheritance can be used by your children. But because you're dead, you're not generating one coin per hour anymore. So the money supply goes down with 20,000 if one person dies. So that means that compared to the amount of people that are alive, the money supply is always sort of equal. And that is, so you solve, let's say, two issues, or two three issues actually in one system. So that's what I came up with. I programmed it already. It's running. You can go to my website. You can make an account. And once you have an account, then you start receiving. You start with 1,000 coins just to get going, and then you start receiving one coin every hour, and you will see that in a period of like 5 years, you already reached 20,000. So it goes quite quickly to get to the full money supply. So that's what I came up with. Then I started to write a book about it. So I got a book. It's called Abund. You can go to my site, abundantme.com. You can download the book there. And so somebody told me, what you're doing with this negative interest, because I didn't know it was demurrage yet. So the name was demurrage. So somebody told me, oh, you need to look at Silvio Gesell's. I knew about the Wurgel case, but I didn't really went into let's say the science that was behind it in Wurgle. And then I found out about Silvio Gazzell, and then I contacted Josh because I knew that or I learned on the internet that he was sort of the guy to meet, and that we had a podcast, and here I am. So that's sort of my story.
Wow, Toyn. Another prophet, another genius. Wow, we have a room full of genii. And aren't we blessed that we can call in from Peru and Hungary and Scotland and Ireland, Rwanda? So something going on in the world which allows us to connect together. Toyn, can you put in the link to your URL in the chat just to make sure the spelling is right and the of your book? And I'm curious, Toyn, have you launched it in Rwanda or anywhere else?
No, anybody can. So basically, there are two things. I have a website. It's called Abundomy, but I'm just at the moment. I'm just started to transfer it because I did a massive update of my financial program, and my financial program is. I'll put it in the. Let's see. This is everyone. Yeah, everyone.
Yeah,
I'll put it in now. It's onecoinage.com.
beautiful. Thank you.
So that's the that is the let's say the financial system, and then I have this. Cool. So this is the website, which is a bit old, but I'm gonna redo that one. But this is basically the first thing that you see is download the book. You can click on it, and then you download my book, which is the most important thing, I think. So the book I wrote a year ago, explaining about basically these four monopolies, how we can fight it, and how this, let's say, this financial system also sort of could have a place in that. I think that so there's perhaps one thing I need to add, which is quite an important conversation that I had from the beginning, is so how do you start with this? Because can you start with, let's say, a small community that uses this type of money and then sort of becomes popular and conquers the world? Sort of, is that possible or not? And in the beginning, let's say, as any person that studies cryptocurrencies, all these initiatives, they have sort of the idea, okay, we're gonna launch this. The technology is very good, so and nobody can see us, and nobody can stop this. And so with let's say this crypto, we can fight the world. To me, that's how I also started. But in the time, let's say in the last 5 6 years, I especially 2 years ago, when you really think about it, it doesn't really make sense. Because you are fighting, you try to fight the system, but the system is so bad that it will try to fight back, and it will just destroy you, probably. So I am not a fan of, I call it a sort of techno, I'm not a fan of the technology push. I think it should be, let's say, it's not technology, but it's like what is the English word? It should be a push, let's say, from philosophy. It should be a philosophy push, sorry, pull. So people first need to understand what is the philosophy before
Exactly.
you start pushing a technology. So and that is a very important distinction, because if you try to do a technology push, then you create a technology that is sort of fighting, that needs to fight the rest, and you can do that only by going, let's say, underground and make it everything hidden. But the issue, what we are fighting, is we want to have transparency. So how are you gonna mix, let's say, transparency with fighting the system? Because you're basically showing everything that you do, and so the people that are fighting you will just know, okay, this is the group that we need to destroy. This is what we need to cancel or to make illegal. It doesn't work. So that's why I wrote my book, just to explain the philosophy about abundance. And if you look at what's going on in the Strait of Hormuz, that is, to me, is like this cool example of creating scarcity. So they're just pushing more scarcity to push more control, because they need more control, because they know people are waking up, and so they try to push that at the moment. Okay, Josh, you on? I see a hand of
Yeah,
Josh.
so
Yes.
I want to focus on something that you and I, Toyn, do not agree on, for the purpose of bringing this conversation back to what I think we're all here to discuss, which is how to have better conversations and how to enable our different visions to coexist and potentially compete with each other in actual practice. So, Toyn, you said that you believe it is important for the money supply to be fixed relative to the population, that is the solution to inflation or deflation. I don't agree with that point. So what do we do about that? We could debate endlessly about economic theory until one of us concedes. That might
Exactly.
never happen. Or we could each build our visions and set them up to operate side by side in what I refer to as a sandbox. A sandbox is a play space in which each of us can, to the extent that we're capable of, manifest a working model of our ideas, and open it up for the participation of anyone who finds it interesting or compelling. And so you and I, Toyn, who agree on maybe 80 or 90%, but have different understandings of 10 or 20%, can set up our respective projects both in the same sandbox, and we can see how they work. The reason why I don't agree with the idea of a fixed money supply is because I think that that would be inherently, I think it would create instability. I think that money supply needs to be flexible. Like I said, I don't think that the best way to resolve that difference of opinion is to argue about it endlessly. I think that ultimately you need to just test them out side by side. And so if you set up your system and I set up my system, one has a fixed money supply, another has a different model for regulating the money supply, then and one performs better or worse than the other, then there will be concrete evidence to persuade the group that has gravitated toward one to move over to the other in a non-coerced way. One only moves to a different model when one is convinced that it's a better one. And the problem of the bubbles is really a formidable problem. You've got an incredibly rich bubble that there's a high hurdle to entering your bubble. And I think you're experiencing that challenge in terms of getting people to come and participate in your system. Whereas if we all come together around this mission of creating a sandbox that is inclusive, that your vision does not in any way detract from my vision, that they can be set up side by side, then we're, I think, potentially bringing those bubbles together in a way that can build some real momentum. So to me, what the foundation of what I'm here for is a conversation, a new conversation paradigm, and a sandbox. Can we, and the conversation is about the sandbox. How do we create the sandbox, and how do we facilitate the conversation? That is what I think I'm here for.
So let me first respond to that, if I may. So I always say so because you're very right saying I'm sort of in a bubble. I did this all by my own. I didn't have help, sort of. I just looked at it and gave it my best shot. And I always said that once I can show people what it is that I'm talking about, then we can look at it and see if we can improve it, or where did I go wrong in my reasoning, or is there any mistake? And I'm very open to that. That is also a reason I don't really want to launch it like this is it, because when you launch something, and an example is Quartal. I really like Quartal, for example. It's sort of a cryptocurrency, but it doesn't work with. Let's say it worked with, let's say, if you keep the blockchain alive, then you get coins. So it is a bit different than others, but it's very close to already what I am doing, sort of. I really like that idea, but they launched it, and because they launched it, now they're making concessions. So now they having trading made trading possible with, let's say, fiat currencies. And it's not getting better, it's getting worse because of that, because they sort of want to survive in this world, which is a shame because the idea is good, but once you start to launch it, you get all the other, let's say, decisions to make, because you want to keep it alive, or is it about keeping this thing alive, or is it about making the best thing possible? And that's what I exactly want to do, what you say. I want to show what I've made, and if other people can make other things, then just compare it, and what are the best things that we can derive out of it, so that we know how to continue. And that's also why I reached out to you, so that other people can that sort of study this, that know what they're talking about, can look at this and say, okay, I don't like your solution for deflation, inflation, or you're making a mistake here and there. And I think there are many possibilities to solve this. Let's say you can turn buttons, or you can press buttons in my one coin per hour system. For example, you can change the demurrage if there are economic, let's say, reasons to change the parameters in your system. Why not? But first, somebody needs to convince me that is necessary. Because, for example, if I look at inflation, 120 years ago, there was like $1 trillion in the world. Now there is 350 trillions in going around in the world. That has all been created outside our knowledge, because somebody created it and somebody owned it and borrowed it out to other people, which we allowed. So this money supply has just exploded in the last 120 years without real big effect. Yeah, the only effect is that most people are poor now because the people that print money can control scarcity. But it doesn't sort of You have the biggest, let's say, industrial development in perhaps the last 100,000 years. So inflation is not really causing, let's say, everything to collapse. But the question is, if we do we want if you, let's say, allow the money supply to be changing, the question will be, so how do you do that in a fair way? And that is a discussion that you need to have. And I'm very glad to be here to have that discussion with people that have these ideas, because otherwise I'd be only in my bubble.
I'd like to come in, brothers. I think that's also why I'm here, because I'm a dialogue practitioner, as well as we're creating an economic system based on the ancient principles of Brehon Law. So I come with a number of different hats here, and what I'd like to witness is that dialogue as a methodology, as I learned it from David Bohm, and I'll put that in the chat. I learned dialogue from David Bohm, and it provides the process where two competing ideas, an idea of fixed money supply and an idea of flexible money supply, can be in a big enough container where they can both live and operate and thrive. And so I think that's partly why I'm here. And I'm just looking at the time. We're nearly on 2 hours. That's what we had allowed. And I'm not suggesting we finish, but I'm just saying we're here together in this particular group. We're meeting every 2 weeks for now to see if we can provide a continuous dialogue methodology that would be able to bring in other people who aren't here in this meeting. Michael's not here, Guillen is not here, Cam is not here. How do we create the richness of this, which we can share? Obviously, we'll give them the Zoom call, but we're also looking for a way for those people who aren't present at this time to fully think and feel into this artifact, which is our Zoom call, to be able to look at the chat, to be able to look at the transcript and contribute their wisdom and insights as well. So this is why we've convened in these every 2 weeks. We're not here to launch new economic systems. Everybody in this room has launched an economic system in their own separate bubbles. And so what we're looking for is an ocean so that all the bubbles can live heartily and in a state of abundance. So that's kind of why we're here. We're trying to produce a dialogic methodology. So we're not here to argue about inflation. And I think what dialogue does, it creates the opportunity for us to create the sandbox to speak at a philosophical level, so that when you go and test Abundeme, and if you test NES that Josh has, or if we want to do a system called Gras, or if Chris is implementing something in Scotland, that we are all coming from a space where we're operating and contributing, as Gyuri has been saying, as an indie web. With some of the technical tools that Gyuri's talking about, with some of the technical architecture for the money systems, with the dialogic methodology. So I just wanted to bring that in. Dialogue is a space where this is possible. And this is our third dialogue. We call these dialogues. And we'll have one in 2 weeks where some people will do some work, they'll share for information and etc. So that's why we're here, to create the continuous dialogue. And because we'd allowed 2 hours, I think, and we're in 90 minutes now, so I just want to say we're allowing 30 minutes to percolate, and if people have commitments for 2 hours, that 30 minutes is a timestamp. So I just want to leave the space open now. Thank you.
Hello. Okay.
Yeah, go ahead. Oh, it's
Well,
me.
I couldn't find the button to raise my hand. I don't know. I just can't find it. Well, thank you, Tim or Tom or what was it, Tim?
Tone, but you can also call me Tony, but it's Tone.
Tony, that's it. That's it. That's it. That's it. And call me Yuri. Yuri
Yuri.
is good enough, you know. Yuri, yeah, Duke
Great.
Dog Yuri. And Josh, I think I'm so happy to hear from you what exactly I wanted to tell you. That you see that the most important thing, it's very important, the economy and all these things, and I'm very into this. But we really need to figure out how we can actually have conversations which last, which permanent, which are resumable, and reflect the complexity of what we are dealing with or captures it. So that's really the what I'm trying to bring, and Tim, the Tony, the that's exactly it. And I like the sandbox idea, but that's what the IndieWeb is basically. It's actually a constellation of different scaling architectures, because the idea that you want to be you want to do something, whatever it is, and then you go to the so-called non-functional requirements. How is it scaled? Is it a personal thing? Is it a low number? Is it millions of users? Is it intergalactic? Now, clearly, whatever you want to do as a human being is the same. But at the moment, what we do, we architect the whole full stack and rewrite everything every time to fit that requirement. Whereas what we should be able to do is to get it work for one, get it work for two, get it work for three, and the rest is principle of inductive construction, which is to say you should be able to figure out once and for all the basic machinery that anybody can use for whatever they want to do. Because if you've got to create a universal way of having conversations about what I want, which turned gradually into working software, which is really possible now. Then we have and the same thing is that exactly we should be able to the way the IndieWeb are dreaming about it would be for all these years, and it took me a long time to actually articulate it. Had Alan and others helping in discussions, in dialogue, it came out. There are principles, and I'm so glad to hear you, because I'm the same with the web. If you want to know what kind of a system we need, well, just say no. Look at the opposite of what that is. You got a strong guarantee that something which enhances human potential is everything of the opposite. And I got 72 items. If you look at the way we work on with the web, the way it is constructed, there are 72 points. It's not, it shouldn't be separation of concerns, it should be integration of concerns, and everything. Yeah? And I got this idea from Alan Kay 10 years ago on his Simplicity Talk, when he says he takes an A4 sheet of paper, write down the best practices of today, and whatever we believe to be true, and stick a no in front of it and explores that space. So I agree. I think this is the key. This is why it's dialogue, and in fact, it has to be omni-optional. It's not whether it's synchronous or asynchronous, you need all. Whether it's centralized or decentralized or be omni-centric, we need all of them. Okay, you can't have us. You need all of them. It's quite clear. However, we rightly criticize the big tech. You do need to be able, you need a God's eye view to be accessible for us. Okay? So it's not an either or, it's all and. And you really need to need to, and that's the whole point, is that I think the English is even a blind squirrel can find a nut. Okay, I really like people who are far out, like my wife, because from that position she sees things that I don't. As Wilbur said, I finished now with this, and I'm so enjoying it. It's just so lovely to be. I'm in heaven. Is that nobody's that smart to be wrong all the time? Oh, to to be wrong all the time. Okay, so just bear that in mind. And thank you very much. I think we really need to for, and I put some links in, but I'm not ready with it. But next week, I'm gonna create this for this discussion today. I will put it up, whatever I can do with the existing bits of the technology. And just one other thing, that's the other thing that is built into the Indie Web. The best thing about the IDFS, which nobody knows, nobody studied it as I did, is the idea, which is in the very first videos. It's there. The whole point is that you should be able to create something working on the web for the benefit of people, which is unstoppable, uncensorable, and you can just walk away, and it will be good for forever. Because it should have the ways of actually improving it and changing it. That's the whole point. You don't deliver and you are the boss. The whole point is you create something for the commons, for all benefits, and provide the means of they actually be able to do that for themselves. So the only, but the key crucial thing, we need a system which people can build it for themselves. And in fact, this is what I do. I write very little code, because anything worth having, somebody has already built the system. All you need to do is find it and find a way of plugging it in. That's all you need to do. Most of the thing, I stopped coding 6 years ago. There's no need. You need to find the people you need to talk. You need to find the system. Which and figure out how you compose them and how you describe this composition. So it's really a matter of notation and methodology. It's aimed, what you do is the way that you do it. That's what gets results. So I'm very happy to be able to see your face again. I see you. That's it. We all come to this. I mean, you are the first person who said exactly what I felt, and I feel it just as important that as you do. Well, if you want to know what a good financial system should do, hell no, just look at what the opposite of what's happening. Okay? Because that's and we don't need to argue this, okay? Whether it's fuck up theory or conspiracy, I don't care. It is clearly the system is as bad as it possibly could be. Okay, and it actually shows what it denies. It denies human potential. Okay, so there you are. Thank you very much. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, brother. So when I heard Toyn describing abonomy, have I said that right? Abonomy? Abonomy.
Abandon me. It's like the
Abonomy, abonomy.
combination between
Abonomy.
abundance and economy, you know.
I realized that what we're sitting in, if that's abonomy, what we're sitting in is sodomy, because we're getting fucked every way. I thought that's a lovely context. But Jury, I have a question for you. With all of these no coding tools, low coding tools, and you're saying, let's not do that. How do we empower people? Because I see no coding
Because the
empowering
point is
people.
that I haven't tried it. You can be low code, high, or it doesn't matter. It's the opposite. The more they push it, the more you know that's not the way. Because what's happening is that the web as it grown. And I fully understand the only way you could have made it interplanetary and global is to build in financial incentives for it to grow. Okay, so that's why this unholy marriage between money and VC. But this is something the most important I forgot to say, that it's we are not interested. Again, what's the opposite of exit strategy in a VC world? The exit strategy is not even what Holochain did, which is a very good step in the right direction. They said, let's exit to communities. Okay. Now, actually, I think it's what we are doing here right now, we are entering into communities. We need to build the capabilities needed to actually spawn communities. That really is the challenge. How we could facilitate inter-intellect, how can we facilitate all these good intents can be, because we need to make the bandwidth so much harder. And coming back to the low code and no code and whatever, the as I said, anything you want, video editing, annotation, doesn't matter what it is, good open source libraries are around. We really need to think, as they used to call it, programming in the large. No, we need to consider the composition of all these. And there is something which was invented in 2010 called progressive web apps. Okay, so as long as you can reconstitute whatever web capability you want as a PWA, it has two things. It works offline, okay, and it works with local storage. So if you reshape whatever you have and formulate it in such a way that it works on offline as well and local storage, then it can be trivially incorporated into the indie web by anybody, anyhow. Okay, because the whole trick is the whole not the whole thing is that instead of every application worrying about the create, read, update, delete mechanism and use a database, whatever, which has to be handcrafted for that particular solution, let's have a universal way of handling the crude operations, the data layer operations, which is interplayable and exchangeable at whatever scale. Okay, and that's really the solution. So the actual working with it or extending it's really it does require some knowledge, but it's not that complexity. And the point is, we need to be, I mean, like I do with Pyrgos or Clipped or whatever. There is Pyrgos, for example. It's got there are many other systems produce this kind of thing, these sort of entire suite of applications which work uniformly and work with the storage layers. So there is three the infrastructuring. That's a separate issue. But you got storage and KPI. That's the other thing, which is very important. So you ship work. That's it. You ship working systems. Allow people to interact with them and play with them. And as Tim, as you said, you can do the experiments if you want this or and you should be able to articulate this, and the emphasis on the conversation and the articulation, I call it the formulation. You got to formulate the ideas, and you should be able to have them. Yeah. Okay. Running on the computer. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it. I don't know whether it was any of it was comprehensible, but
Perhaps I can also comment a bit on that.
Yes, please.
It's also what I noticed myself. So in the beginning, I really focused on making it peer-to-peer, so that you don't need a central database. And And I truly believe that that is very possible. It's only important that the parameters you use in your system that are clear. So, because then you can just develop it on an island and have another island have the same system again. And then when somebody travels from one island to the other island, it's still, you can still communicate with each other, so that you can still believe and check if the other person has, let's say, has gone through the same process as you did, so that let's say his money is as real as yours. So that was sort of the basis of my idea. But as I said, is at the at this moment, I don't think it's the technology is not too important. It's about the philosophy. So first, people need to understand what is the philosophy, and then you get your technical solutions.
But the point is that you go that the point is that whatever you do, you have to be omni-optional. Whatever you do should be able to work in whatever constellation, because you may not have
Exactly.
thought of it now, but there will come a point where that will be required. And the point is that when you shift, or let's just take the classic example, real time or asynchronous, you need both. Okay? You can't say, oh, it's got to be real time. And you got to be able to offline and online. And you must be able to handle all these dualities. You really need to be able to do that. I
Yeah,
think
but to me
that's
that is also sort of a mathematical question. So because you can solve all these things. You have the blockchain technology, and you have, let's say, the old-fashioned technologies.
Sorry to interrupt. Blockchain is not the right philosophy.
No, it's
The
one. To
whole
me, it's
point, the
one.
blockchain is the notion of absolute time is only needed if you want to be God and want to control it. Okay? For all the other or real people, what is needed is they themselves can validate what they do, and to the extent that they're connected, and all those connected graphs will be small, small world, three hops away. The very idea of the blockchain is there as a mirage. It's
Oh,
impossible.
so I
Sorry?
agree. I agree with you. So it's not that I'm saying it should be in a blockchain. What I'm saying is you have that technology. So if you are offline for a while, then you can use, let's say, temporary blockchain, or you have a personal block. I call it
No,
personal
no, no.
blockchain.
Sorry. It's the big divide between the blockchain and the not the ledger. Who needs the ledger? Accountants. What we need is distributed hash tables. Please, if you haven't
No, but
studied the
I think
IPFS. Sorry.
I think that's what I mean, actually.
Yeah, IPFS is a
Yeah.
superset of that. If from RPFS you can create a ledger, you can create a ledger, but it will it, but it just won't work,
Yeah. So you
Yeah,
don't need one
okay.
ledger. I agree with that.
That's it. In fact, this is the whole point. If you want our autonomy, and just as you said, if you need radical openness, you got to have the whole thing open. And anybody can verify the bit that they care about anytime. Okay, on
Exactly.
demand. You need to be on demand, validate your the sphere that concerns you. And that's exactly, and then you can, and yes, we did and everything. Then you don't need authority. We are the authority. Okay, the participants are the authority.
Yeah, that's the basis of what I'm thinking also about. It's the basis. It's
Yeah, and at a philosophy level, that's
yeah.
it.
Absolutely.
I see Josh with his hand up, Josh. And then we have 12 minutes in our allotted time if people stay. That's amazing. But Josh.
Yeah, so I want to try to bring us back to square one for the purpose of planning the next meeting. These meetings never end up being what I anticipated, but I try to also be open to the idea that what I anticipated was not what needed to happen, and what happened was what needed to happen. So I thought that today Mike was going to be here and was going to present us with a demonstration of a crude version
Yeah, that was the plan. Yeah.
of a conversation paradigm. He ended up not being here today. I don't know why. I'm assuming that he didn't need to be here today. But there are so many different directions that this conversation can go in. And what I think is fundamental, what I think is ground zero, is the conversation architecture. Because that can then be used to conduct an endless array of sub conversations or completely separate conversations. But until that architecture is in place and is functioning and is a tool that is available to us, then we have not moved anywhere beyond just what we already had, which was the ability to connect via Zoom and have a synchronous conversation among whoever shows up and record it so that whoever didn't show up can view it. We all agree that we need to move beyond that. So what I would propose for the next time is I will make sure that I connect one-on-one with Mike, and that he is present at the next meeting and has a demo ready to go that he can present to us. And I've got a list of questions and topics that need to be addressed in order to flesh out a conversation architecture. So what I'm proposing is that the next conversation could potentially be both the first block and also the conversation about the first block. So that Mike is going to come. I've already seen his first most crude implementation of this dialogue paradigm. He's going to have something a step beyond what I've already seen, hopefully, for the next meeting. And he can then show it to us, and then we can have a conversation about what else needs to be done to it, in what issues need to be addressed, how what functionalities need to be added. And then it can become sort of an iterative process where we are using the tool to talk about the tool, and that the tool evolves through the process of using it. So that's what I propose we do next time.
And I just want to add in that Jury is saying he will have something to demonstrate on IPFS IndieWeb, which will keep us all within the same technical architecture so that we're not going to LinkedIn here and Zoom there and Amazon over there. So we're talking about potentially, if it happens, if that we might see two demos next time. And if not, well, then we'll gather and we'll see who's there in the time and space. So, shall we start checking out? Please to keep the room open if anybody wants to stay later. If anybody needs to leave, we've allowed 2 hours, 7 minutes left.
Can I just mention the time zone thing, because I feel like this is throwing a wrench in the works. I still am confused about the difference between GMT and Dublin time. And I know that last week Mike ended up showing up an hour later because he was confused. Can we make a different time zone be the reference time zone? Can we just say that East Coast, United States, New York time zone is what we will all calculate our time differences from? Would that work?
So this is called the Bretton Woods policy. This is what you fuckers did after the war. You made the time zone, you made the dollar, you made the Fed, and look where you're at now. So no, fuck off.
Yeah, I think I was
Okay,
an hour
let's
late
choose a
also
different.
because of this.
How about Rwanda time? What's your time zone doing?
I think it's Central African time, CAT it's called. So
Does that ever change? Do you guys do time changes?
no,
no, it's no, we don't have it in
All
our
right,
country.
let's make that.
Yes, that's where Guyane is. Yes.
Let's use that then. Let's.
Well, I'm proposing Scottish time, which is opening time.
So it's the opening of the
So,
bars, or
that's the
yeah,
one.
exactly. Yeah.
Opening, beautiful. And I propose Dublin mushroom time, which means you turn it whatever time you like. So, yes, Josh, we will put in multiple time zones, and we pray that your confusion will be dissolved because you'll have so many time zones to turn up at.
But perhaps you
Okay.
can also send a reminder like half an hour before, because I'm an hour late, I think, because I messed up the time zones. I don't know.
Okay, I will send a reminder. I will, I promise.
Can I conclude with a little anecdote? From the oil business, there was a meeting of OPEC. And the I think it was the Venezuelan rep and the Saudi rep were having a conversation. And the Venezuelan rep said to the Saudi rep, tell me, he said, what does inshallah mean? And the Saudi rep said to him, well, it's like manana, but without the same sense of urgency.
And I was in the Middle East. You're lucky if people turn up on the same day, never mind the length
Exactly.
of time. So, yes, we will have multiple time zones. But actually, do you know what? We're only turning up in the now. That's how we're actually turning up. I mean, you're saying, Josh, that Mike didn't turn up because he's confused about the time zone. That might not be true. He might not want to be here.
Possible, but we're already fighting an uphill battle. We don't need to be creating additional obstacles to collaboration.
I
So
agree.
can we agree that we're going to shoot for the same day and the same time that we did today, which was 9 a.m. here in Lima, and that we're going to try to communicate that in a way that nobody can be confused for the next
Ah, somebody's going to be confused. We cannot guarantee that nobody will be confused.
one.
How could you do that?
Can I ask everybody to click on that link and on that page, write change, write their name or change the display name. I
Okay.
wanted to see whether it is actually working. Okay, this is not me. This is just ScriptPad. It's one of the components we want to use. So please just go there.
Yeah.
Perhaps take a screenshot of what you do, what you see, and paste it into the document if it works. I don't know
There
whether
now,
it
what do
will
you want us to
work,
do?
but Well, somebody should share their screen, then I
Okay.
can talk
I
you
can do that.
through.
I can do that.
Yeah. At the moment, I'm having trouble getting that copying that link myself.
Okay, no worries.
Copy link. Okay. Sorry, I have to let the cat out.
Okay, let the cat out.
It's working with me.
Well, she's hungry, and the door was closed. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so this is the link you gave us.
Yes. And this is just to show that what can you see, give you that mushroom. The whole point is this is there are, it's not the only one, but Pripyat is very good at this. It basically you can share any document you create in a way that anybody can have access to it, and who has the link, and edit it. And then you can if you click on your mushroom, and you go
I
to
love it. Where's the
settings.
mushroom?
Yeah, there's a mushroom icon
Oh,
there.
sorry. Yeah. Okay. Click the mushroom. Yeah.
Okay, and say settings
Yeah.
and change the display name. Go to profile, click on profile, and write your name. There you are. So I'm just saying that I want to, I'm not writing any code. I'm using existing open source stuff and combine them. So this is already gives you, if everybody does this here, and if you preserve this link, this will I don't not gonna delete it or anything. So you can send messages to me because I'm gonna be there a lot. You can chat, and you can write anything you like, create a new heading, a new section in there, and write whatever you want, and know that asynchronously some of us will have a look at it. And I want to use this as the this I use this then to create, anybody can create their own private Minecraft or their own thing, not in here, in somewhere else. And through IPFS, you should be able to share it. So the whole point is to be asynchronous, and you should be able to change it and everything. But this is a way to get off the ground, okay? And if you ever, and I'm gonna put in a link tomorrow, which would enable anybody who's on this page, click on that link and should be able to real-time communicate, screen share like Zoom, without Zoom. That's already in the work. And then I will put in links which show you how you can see, archive all your searches, archive all the pages that you care about, and then annotation. Anyhow, so there's a space here that we can use, and I'm glad that it actually works. So please have a look at do things there.
Guys,
Okay,
I'm gonna have
so
to.
that,
Sorry
yes.
to interrupt. I'm gonna have to jump, guys. But pleasure to meet you all, and
Yeah,
no
thank
doubt
you.
we'll convene again in a couple of weeks.
2 weeks,
Inshallah,
okay.
rather than manana. Okay.
Inshallah
Yeah,
manana, and
thank
abundami
you. Bye now.
thanks, bro.
Bye now.
Okay.
Okay, shall we check out?
Yeah.
Unless anybody wants to stay.
If I want to mo know more about that CryptPad, can I contact somebody, or how do we
Yeah,
contact
yeah,
each
yeah.
other?
It's actually, yes. You welcome me. I will keep this open. Or I'm using Pripyat all the time. So within an hour or so, any it will notify me that you updated it. Okay.
Okay, so we
So
can also
it's a.
communicate through this link, sort of.
That's the whole point. You just put a section in there and say hello, this is me. Oh yeah, I see you there. Yeah, okay. So
Yeah.
please make use of it. And if you've got any questions, I'm around. I'm trying to train myself to be interruptible, because I really suffered from not tolerating interrupts and suffering from interrupts. So I changing my way, so I relish on interrupts from anybody. Okay.
Okay.
And I just want
I'll
to honor that It means we don't have to email you. You don't have to put your email
That's
address.
it.
We can connect you in CryptPad.
That's it. The
Wow.
whole point of the IndieWeb is to forget about email.
Yeah.
Manage your own contact space.
Beautiful.
Yes.
Yeah, love it. Okay, so blessings to us all for being here, those that were here, those that were supposed to be here and are not. We bless them too. And we bless the ones who will come next time and who were never here. And one of the things that I wrote down, particularly when you were speaking, Gary, is, and it blew my own mind. You said, we have to be able to connect with centralized, and we have to be able to connect with decentralized. And then I drew a circle between them and I said, you have to do both. But then what I also did is I flipped the top one. And I said, you have to be able to do none as well. So, no, I don't want to play in your crypt pad. And that's the beauty of the
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah.
So, blessings to us all. I'm actually very excited and very grateful. There is an abundance here of time and energy and space and expertise. And I'm feeling very grateful to have been part of the convening. So I'm out with that. Blessings to us all. Gary, Josh, Tune, check out.
It's okay. We'll see you soon.
Well, I feel the same way. It's amazing. It's been an amazing call. Thank you, Tim and Josh and Chris. Was it Chris? I have trouble with the new names, but yeah, I mean it really is taking shape. Really need to have this. Yeah. So thank you. Thank you, Paul, for arranging it. Yeah.
Thank you, Josh, for inviting me to this group. It's amazing. Thank you.
Yeah, as my checkout, I want to say that I'm already chafing at the every 2 weeks format, and I'm hoping that we can move beyond that as soon as possible because I don't want to wait 2 weeks to continue this conversation. And I think that what we're doing is creating an architecture where that where we overcome that that limitation. So I'm excited for this conversation not only to continue but to gain momentum through overcoming existing technical limitations.
Yeah,
Thank
I'm
you all.
also
And we already
available
got
for
to.
that, you know. I
And
think this
now
is
we are on a,
very important,
remember,
yeah.
notice, we are already on the same page if you want to. So if you have a, I think you can check that page and I will put all the work I'm gonna do with this here and you should be and you should be able to look at that and have a conversation. That's your point. The important thing is not enough to be able to share your work. We should be able to share the process itself,
Yeah,
which
beautiful.
creates the work.
So, Giri, I will put the Zoom link into the crypt pad.
Yes, please.
Yeah, and come
Yes.
here, is .fr, is that France? Is that a French URL? .fr?
It's a French, the developers, it's the host that in France.
Okay.
But please support them on Open Collective. I do that. And if you buy your own account, I think that supports them. And I
Yeah.
really like them. I really support them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So seems to me we are actually living what we are dreaming into. We're now
That's
all
it.
on the same page.
That's it.
CryptPad.fr. That's beautiful. So I've put all the
Yeah.
resources there. And as you say, I have three channels working when we're connecting. So I have my email when we're connecting, I have my Zoom when we're connecting, and I have my WhatsApp. So to bring it all back into the one page, and I really like that as the message, Jury, we're all on the one page. For those that want to be there.
Yeah, that's it. Thank you very much.
Right, blessings,
Thank you very
brothers.
much. Yeah, bye-bye.
Yeah.
Next
All
time.
right. Okay. See you later.
Thank you very much. It was great. Yeah.
Yeah, so much fun. Yeah, I do want to save the chat though. Where do I save the chat? Where
Yes,
do I?
please say. Oh. And well, you send it to me because you really, I don't think you can upload anything to it unless you may even be able to up. Yes, you should be able to upload it into the, no. Okay, send it to me. I upload it then. But the best thing is to get an account, then you should be okay. You should be
Yeah.
able to really use, it's a drive as well. Think about it.
Good
It's
drive.
Google Drive equivalent, but
Yeah.
it's encrypted and secure and all that stuff. Yeah. But somehow you send it to me. Yeah. Okay.
2022 226. You know, I just want to make sure I'm saving the chat.
Yes,
Oh,
and yes, I need.
I get a chat. Yeah. All right, brother.
Okay, okay.
So, you
I
know,
just.
after 18
Just a
months,
second.
go on. Yeah.
No, I just want to make sure that I take. No, I want to have a screenshot of you and me here for the scrapbook. Yeah. Okay. I put it in the document because that's where I am. Can you check the document before you go? There you are.
Yeah, where do I go back into Moo? Is
Well,
it?
go say, oh, please save that link. That
Yeah,
crypted, or just say crypt, yeah.
I'm here on the link. Yeah, let me refresh it.
Refresh it. Yeah. You're
Where?
not logged, you're not in here. Oh yes, you're there. Yes, you're there. Now you can
Oh,
see
because
it,
I'm not
yeah.
logged in. Hold on. Yeah, it's wanting me to sign up. Yeah. Yeah. Let me see if I can
Okay.
learn anything. Hold on a sec. Yeah, I have to sign up. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Let
Okay.
me just.
Okay. See you.
All right, brother.
Bye bye.
Blessings.
Thank you.
See ya.